when it came to their African connection, there was really no connection or any response, anything emotional about it or passionate. And Dr. Gates Jr. said that he found that really interesting and really quite peculiar in the fact that he thought they would have been more responsive or more emotional. So that was the gap in the research that I wanted to fill. I wanted to actually immerse myself as an American into that environment to see whether or not I could discover why or why not, why there wasn't an emotional response. So it was really, really interesting, a very, very interesting journey on many levels, emotional, physical, financial, that sort of thing. Really wonderful.
Yeah. How did you go about this process? If you could just kind of walk us through, you started with this idea, of course, about what you wanted to do with your research in this journey. How did you go about putting that into practice?
Well, it actually started 6 years ago. And I started researching the Gullah Geechee people down south. And from that, which actually we did in my independent class with three of the students here at the U of I, we did a short documentary that won Best Documentary in the Indigenous Garifuna Indigenous International Festival in California. So with that, we moved toward, I started researching and interviewing other people who took a DNA test from AfricanAncestry.com. It's very popular. It's the only database that actually has samples from particular tribes, African tribes. So I started investigating, and I took the Ancestry.com test that shows you a lot about ethnicity, but not necessarily about a particular tribe. And then I did the AfricanAncestry.com that has me connected 100% to the Mende tribe on my mother's side of Sierra Leone, West Africa. Mm-hmm. So basically, through the years, I just started recording footage here and there. I have four other individuals in the documentary who actually took the test, and I interviewed them when they took the test, a year after and a year after, to see whether or not that knowledge actually made a difference. And a lot of them said what they really – the only way to answer that question was to actually go to their ancestral homeland. Mm-hmm. And so that – once I came here to the U of I – wonderful research, one school, submitted a proposal to a grant, the William and Flora Hewlett grant, mm-hmm. out of the International Studies, and lo and behold, I was granted the grant. So lo and behold, I purchased a ticket to go to West Africa, and I was on my way. I was on my way.
Was there a moment over in Sierra Leone where, you know, you mentioned, you know, there were times you feel like, you know, I need to go home. I'm completely out of place here. Was there a moment where that really shifted for you, where you started to feel like, yes, I feel like this place is a part of me, and I feel more comfortable here?
I did, yes. It was when I found out more and experienced more of the people. The way that in Freetown, which was called that because the Africans that either escaped or returned, they were given land in the middle of town. They called it Freetown. And they were known for not locking their doors. They were known for sharing food. If anybody went through the town and they needed a place to put their head, people could come in and eat with them. I looked at that, and it started to become familiar because that's the way my family is. I started looking at how there's respect for elderly people at big events, how the children are taught when to speak and when not to speak. Out of respect for your position and the position of your elders, your mother, and things along those lines. And I started to see how it's so much like my family. So I didn't feel as disconnected at that time as far as tradition, as far as mores. And so I think that when they started, even the dietary, I grew up on seafood. I'm an East Coast Virginia girl. They eat the same seafood that I do, with the blue crabs and that sort of thing. And so I started to see some similarity. I started to, you know, when I would share, for instance, when my mother passed away in 2002 and I dedicated this film to her, I had taken care of her for 4.5 years full time, she and my father. I took time out of my television career to do that. best thing I've ever done. But during that time after the year, I felt that I needed to honor her in some way. You know, so I grieved. I talked about her. I did a lot of things just to honor her. And a lot of other groups, they do that. They have a way of tearing the part of their jacket or putting black or something like that. And when I found out, when I mentioned it over in West Africa, they called me a crier. I was the crier of the family. It is a very highly respected spiritual position. Here in America, if you cried as much as I did, you know, there are other ways of handling that. People would say, well, do you need to talk to someone, which I think is wonderful. I think all of that is fantastic. But it did give me a different sense and a different perspective when they were like, you know, you're just the crier of the family and that sort of thing. So I think that when I came back, everything started to sink in.
What do you hope that the audience takes away if they're able to see the highlights at the Art Theater here on March 27th, the two-hour highlights?
I would hope that they would appreciate the vulnerability that they're going to see. And I say that because, as a journalist, I'm always respectful of the personal and private space of other people. To have the camera turned on you, myself, was very jolting at times. I felt it very invasive. I did not want the world to see me at certain times, but I allowed it to happen because I wanted them to see the truth. I think that was a huge lesson. I think that the audience will see that and appreciate that because we all can connect on a level of when it comes to our hearts.